And that's one of the things about religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody, we're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge, so ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Hive Mind. Today is July 9th, 2020. I am your host, Nate Kapp, joined by co-host Brandon Martin. Welcome to the 10th Cubbyhole Podcast, where important topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. Our website is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. On today's show, I'd say into the next shows, we'll be explaining or expanding on natural law, talking about moral relativism, justifications, apophysis, force versus violence, conscience, references of wrongs, references of rights, law of the jungle, solipsism, social Darwinism, and much more. And before we get into that material, Brandon is going to give us a short update on the Seed for Growth conference and what we can expect with that. So what's up, Brandon? What's been going on, man? Glad to have you back on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back on here with you, Nate. Things are going as decent as they could be, considering the current condition that we're all living under, obviously.
Definitely.
Especially with this plandemic that is going on. But yes, I'm doing pretty decent in my own life, and it's nice to be able to get back on here and do some more work with you, do some more of the great work with you, that is.
Yeah, man. I'm so stoked that you're still a part of this, and man, we have so much work to unfold in this cubbyhole.
Yes, it's very exciting. But to go right into what you were talking about with the Seed 4 conference, the update for the Seed 4 conference is that I have received my contract for that and have sent it back for confirmation. And, you know, from there, then all we have to do, I mean, that's set in play. Besides that, I'm just going to be talking to the rest of the speakers, making sure that the travel arrangements are all set in motion again, and everything is looking golden with that.
Nice.
So the Seed 4 conference is going on May 14th and 15th of 2021 at the Athens Baker University in Athens, Ohio. It's going to be epic. Top caliber speakers are going to be showing up, from Mark Passio to Mark Devlin. Even I think we may be able to squeeze in Logan Hart at this point, because he was talking about coming and talking about what we're going to be talking about today, cosmic law and natural law, which I'm very happy to see another speaker trying to be involved with that conference. It's going to be amazing. And you've had some of the guests, like Dylan McCormick, who was going to speak there also, and his work is top of the line from my point of view when it comes to self-defense. Douglas Martin, Indica Cap, Martin also. But yeah, I can't wait to see what you guys bring to the table, and I can't wait to be a part of this. You know, it's really exciting, and I think it's really important that we continue to do that work and push forward, even in these times of restricting our freedoms and our liberties.
Absolutely. Well, man, I appreciate that update. You know, it's really awesome you're managing that event, and I know it's going to be pretty fantastic, and you know, it's going to happen one way or another. So
Oh, yes. No matter what, even if the COVID actually extended and they still like made me not do the conference, I'm going to find somewhere else to do the conference. And it might not be as big and it might not be as luxurious as the theater room in Athens Baker University, but I'm still going to do it. No matter what, I'm going to put this on and I'm going to get it recorded and put it out there. And hopefully we can still get all the speakers if some crazy scenario like that happens. But I'm not going to back down from getting that work out there.
Same here. Same here. So since we're going to go deeper into natural law today, I'm going to give a little refresher to the episode 9, which I highly recommend listening to first if you haven't done so yet. I gave a basic breakdown of natural law, which is about inherent, objective, non-man-made, intelligent, and immutable conditions that govern the consequences of human behavior, our behavior. So we got into the apophatic method, which is apophysis. It's about understanding apophysis, meaning affirmation through negation, and how we can find out what a right actually is by simply understanding what actions are not rights because they cause harm to other sentient beings. And also, it's about how we can better understand moral relativism by understanding the opposite, which is natural law. And I also got into how the universe intelligently measures our every behavior so that we can learn our lessons. We can learn lessons. We can learn the lesson. And this is what really needs to be understood so that we can help ourselves and each other, you know, learn that our behaviors of what we do, the ones that cause harm in this world, which are, you know, they're governed by a law in the universe that gives us consequences to help us recognize what we are doing is wrong because it causes harm. And, you know, I'm not trying to sound, you know, extra redundant, but it's like, you know, this really has to be said over and over again to really grasp what we're, you know, trying to say. And it's really easy once you understand it. You know, this whole show is one big solution pack repository capsule. It's a continuation of the true apocalypse, which just means the great unveiling or revealing. And again, this information you're going to hear isn't anything new, and it's not owned by anyone, or it doesn't only have to be told by one person. This information is our human right, not only to know and have available, but to live by and share freely with others as well. This information isn't, you know, some kind of religious dogma either, because religion requires belief. This knowledge does not. And there's a famous quote that I want to say before I hand it off to Brandon by Mikhail Bakunin, and he says, "The liberty of man consists solely in this, that he obeys the laws of nature because he has himself recognized them as such, and not because they have been imposed upon him externally by any foreign will whatsoever." And I really, really align with that quote and completely agree. So, Brandon, I'd like you to give us a breakdown of moral relativism and what that belief system leads to, because I believe that you're one of the best I've ever seen break that down, and I think you have a pretty good grasp on how it definitely does not lead to anything good. So if you want to, go ahead and give us what you got.
For sure, Nate. I just wanted to add in there that it's funny you use that quote, because I have that in my notes that I had brought to the show to use that same quote for this show.
Well, then so we both align with it, man. We both are on the same page, for sure.
Absolutely. Very, very synchronistic with that. But I do kind of want to say something a little bit more about natural law before I talk about moral relativism. The one thing I'd like to say is that natural law is a science. It's a science of morality, and it can be directly observed in the 3D realm. And the invisible workings of that science could be considered metaphysical or spiritual, being the causality of that science. Just like any of the laws in nature, they start in the invisible world and then they are manifested into the physical domain. And that's how we gather the evidence that's necessary to understand that this law is in effect, is by studying the effects that are manifested because of our behaviors and the consequences of our behaviors in the physical domain. It's very important to understand that this, like you said, is not religious. It's not based on belief. It is discoverable. It is knowable. And any individual can come to understand this by observing the world that they live in and the consequences of the behaviors that they do and that everybody does collectively all around them. So, you know, it is a spiritual science in a way, if you really want to look at it that way.
Right.
So the evidence of the existence of natural law is the result, the absolute result state which humanity receives as a direct consequence of the aggregate behavior of beings with the capacity of holistic intelligence, pretty much. So are we free? Are we not free? And how we come to understand whether we're free or not is, you know, determined upon our level of consciousness, whether we can actually perceive and clear our minds to be able to understand what slavery and what freedom actually is. And I mean, this goes into the law of freedom, which is natural law. The law of freedom is natural law. And we do need to understand that as morality increases in the aggregate of any given society, morality increases in the aggregate of any given society. And then also as immorality increases in the aggregate of any society, slavery and tyranny and chaos increase in the aggregate of any society. And that's based on the aggregate behaviors of the beings with the capacity for holistic intelligence and the consequences of those behaviors into society and, you know, what they're doing to other people, whether they're harming people or not. And I wanted to add one more thing there. You know, a lot of people use the word harm, and I personally like to use the word violence. And the reason why is because harm can be very ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very simple, and a lot of people will understand that, and that's why we use the word harm. I associate the word harm with violence. And what violence is to violate another being, obviously. And most people understand that violence is a wrongdoing. Even the people who falsely believe that self-defense is violence, somewhere in their head, they know that violence is a wrongdoing. So I like to say, like, what is a right? A right is an action that does not violate a sentient being in manifestation. So it does not violate any being. And it's not just about harm, because there are forms of harm in our world that are not necessarily violence. And it's something that I had to, like, break down. And, you know, I know that can get a little complex, but it is something I think we should understand, is that when we say harm, we are meaning violence. That's directly what we're meaning. Because, like I said, there are some forms of harm that are not necessarily violent. So I just thought I would give that little take about that. When it comes to, do you want to add anything to that, Nate?
Well, I mean, you know, do you have any examples of harm that is not violence?
Yeah, I'm sure I could give some examples. Let's say a person consents to a certain activity being done. Let's say two beings go into a boxing match and they, an MMA fight, right? Mixed martial arts, okay? And they both consent to that activity where they know they are going to be harmed in the ring. They understand that harm is going to take place in that ring, and they both consent to that behavior knowing that. So when they enter into that engagement, they are not violating each other. There is no violence taking place there, but there is harm taking place there. One of them, actually maybe both of them, are being harmed physically. And that is not a form that is against natural law. That is in alignment with natural law, because they both are intelligent, they are consenting, they are of the age of reason, and they have the ability to consent, you know, consciously and reasonably to that behavior, and nobody's coercing them into doing that. Nobody is, you know, holding a gun to their head and saying, you have to do this, or anything like that. So that's a great example of a behavior that is harmful that is nonviolent.
Right. Very well said. And I really like that you got into harm, you know, when it comes to natural law. It's a violation. It's not just a harm, it's a violation, and then that's violence. And you know, I think that's really, really, really important to understand, especially when we get into, you know, the difference between violence and force. So if you want to,
absolutely,
if you want to, you can extrapolate on that too.
Well, yeah, I mean, violence is a behavior that is manifested that destroys another being's rights or their well-being, their liberties, their ability to express their own freedoms without doing harm, or without violating anybody. So it's the wrongful application of force. And force is the ability to generate change in society or in creation that is rightful. You know, like when you're using force properly, that is, when you're in alignment with it and you're looking at the positive uses of that that energy or that that dynamic, right? So force is the ability to create change that does not violate another being. But the abuse of that force, the negative use, would be violence, where you're taking force and you're actually using it to destroy somebody else's freedoms.
Yeah, man. I also hear a lot of people who, you know, I mean, it's just because our language is so just messed up, and, you know, a lot of words are obfuscated. And I believe violence is definitely one of those words, because, you know, people will say that if you, you know, if somebody pulls a knife on you and tries to, you know, stab you, and you pull a gun on them, then, you know, that's violence. But, you know, if you want to, you can give people a little bit of an understanding of how that is not violence, and that it's a, you know, direct use of force, or you know, self-defense.
Right. So force goes into self-defense. Self-defense is a form of force. And self-defense is only legitimate when one has been initiated with violence. So if you're on the street and a thug comes up to rob you, they pull a gun or a knife on you like you're talking about, they have initiated violence towards you. They are accosting you with coercive forms and behaviors, or the abuse of force, like I was saying. And at that point where they have initiated and accosted you, you now have the right to defend yourself and your well-being, your liberty, and your loved ones, because they're trying to steal or murder or do any of the other harmful behaviors, which coercion in itself is a harmful behavior. And this is really crazy, because they are so egotistically identified with the thing that they're trying to take from you that they would even risk their own lives to do that, you know, because they are so identified with things like money and materialistic possessions that they would go out and risk their own lives and somebody else's well-being to actually get that materialistic thing. Because, I mean, you walk up to people on the streets nowadays and you're likely to get shot. You know, I mean, more people are carrying guns now than ever. and you're very likely to get shot. And I still hear about cases that are going down like this. And that person who pulled that gun out and shot the accoster, if it was necessary in that scenario, then he is completely in the right. So we have to understand that self-defense has to do with necessary. One thing I like to say, like if a little kid comes up and kicks you in the shin, is it necessary to, you know, react abnormally with an abuse of force towards them? I would call it an abuse of force. Like what degree of self-defense do you use against that child?
Right.
This is something that we philosophically talk about at my house a little bit. Is it necessary to kick that kid in the shin, or is it necessary to put that kid down with a bullet? No, it's not necessary, obviously. So you have to gauge what is necessary, you know, but it goes all the way up to equal and deadly force. If they're threatening your life with a gun, with a firearm, you have the right to use equal and deadly force against that person. A lot of people don't like to hear that, but it is a right, and it has nothing to do with violence. Violence is the initiatory abuse of force. It is all about who started it when it comes to violence. So like when you're in the schoolyard and two kids get into a fight, the kid who started the fight is the one who is the most morally culpable for that behavior and is the one who has initiated violence. Wrong, you know, all violence is wrong, but initiated a wrongful action towards another being. And unfortunately, we still see in schools today that it doesn't matter to the teachers that they'll say, oh, both kids are in trouble. It doesn't matter. You were participating in the fight. They want you to be pacifist when it comes to that. Self-defense is completely out of the picture. Don't ever use self-defense, because in their mind, they think that self-defense is violence. They think it's the same thing, and they're wrong. They're absolutely wrong, and they're brainwashed for thinking that.
Right.
They need to realize that self-defense is the rightful use of force, and it's one of nature's oldest laws, actually. It is one of nature's oldest principles that beings have the right to defend themselves when they are wrongfully accosted in the manifestation, you know?
Absolutely. I think that this is one of the reasons why there are so many people in this world who, you know, don't fight back, or they're always calling for someone else to come protect them. And they feel that they have to, because they feel like if they don't, then they're going to get in trouble for, you know, fighting back or shooting back or stabbing back, you know, because they feel like, you know, they're going to, you know, go to, everybody has the fear of prison. They have the fear of, you know, law enforcement coming to take them away and take all their things and basically destroy their whole life just because they fight back. And so that's why a lot of people don't fight back. And, you know, that's why, you know, little kids, they have no problem with fighting back, because, you know, their consequences are, well, you know, you might get, you know, a day of detention, or, you know, go to your room for a day or something. And it's definitely the principle of self-defense is definitely beat out of us. And, you know, I really like what you said about being conscious of how you react with what force or what violence has come at you. And I think that's very critical, because, you know, obviously if someone, you know, pulls out their, you know, wants to, you know, fight you with their fist, you're not going to just pull out a gun and shoot them, you know, because you're abusing your right of self-defense and force. And,
right. You know, that would make, I want to add to that what you just said. Unless it's necessary, they may be capable of killing you. Like, what if it's a big guy and you're a really small guy, or a really small old lady, and you have to pull a gun out to put that person down? Well, then, yeah, it's necessary. Like, my grandmother, she's not going to be able to defend against a group of guys that come to her house just with their hands to beat her down.
Right.
But if she has a shotgun, they're not going to be wanting to do that. She's going to come out on her porch and, you know, blast them away pretty much.
Right.
And I mean, they're ignorant for even trying to do that when an old lady has a shotgun like that. but it's just ridiculous because, like you said, there's an intelligent way of gauging what is necessary and what is not, you know, when it is necessary and when it is not. And what helped me with this was actually because I took a lot of different types of martial arts when I was younger. I took Kempo and I took Kung Fu for a while. And I took some pressure point classes also. And this is something they teach you in martial arts is, you know, you want to put your enemy down with the necessary amount of force that is needed to prevent further harm from occurring, you know. And if it is needed to prevent further harm from occurring, that you actually have to take a life, which is unfortunate, yes, it is. But if it is needed, then yes, you are capable of doing that. And a lot of people wouldn't like hearing that. Not that I'm saying, hey, I want people to go take lives or anything like that. I'm not advocating for that, but I am saying it is a right. There is a right to actually kill somebody, which is different than murdering somebody. Killing is a right. Murdering is a violation. It is violence.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, premeditated as well. But yeah, it's... You know, I think this is one of the things that is so important to just remember, that force is the, you could look at it as the, you know, the positive aspect of a altercation, and, you know, a violent altercation. And then, of course, violence being the negative, which is the initiative part of the altercation. So who starts it is... You know, the one who is causing the violence, and you will be possibly met with force, and it could be deadly force. And I think that's like it's extremely important to understand that, and to not get, you know, violence and force mixed up with each other or confused with each other.
Right. Another way we could put this and define it, right, as like a working definition for these two things. Force is the capacity, the moral capacity, to generate and initiate physical change, right?
Right.
It's an action that does not violate another sentient being or their natural rights. Actions which one always possesses, you know. It's an action that we always possess the right to take, is what I mean, which includes self-defense. So these actions never result in the destruction of freedom. Therefore, these actions are always in harmony with natural law. And contrary to that, violence is the capacity to generate the immoral initiation of physical change, the immoral initiation of harmful behavior or actions that are in opposition to another sentient being's natural rights. So there are actions that one never possesses the right to take because they destroy something which they do not own. It's something that they do not own. It doesn't belong to them. Other beings don't belong to them or anybody, and you don't have the right to infringe upon their liberties at any time. You don't ever, forever. Right. And it will always be that way 100% throughout all time, of the entire manifested reality that we live in. It will never change. So there are actions that always result in the destruction of freedom. Therefore, these actions are always in opposition to natural law.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, well, you know, speaking of alignment, you know, it's about being aligned to natural law through right action, you know, the good behavior. So, you know, when imagining how to align with natural law, I liken it to, you know, like the flow of river, like the river current. Let's say the flow of the river is strong in this case, plus it's, you know, over 3 feet deep. And let's say the direction of the flow of the river represents what a right is. And then the opposite direction represents wrong action. Well, if you're attempting to walk out into the middle, you'll have a way higher chance of going in the right direction if you let yourself flow in the direction of the current, which represents a right, or what a right is. And now, if you decide to try and go against the current, then you'll be met with extreme force, and you'll more than likely be swept off your feet or pushed down by the heavy current. And I look at this as, you know, like instant karma or consequence. And that's, you know, like, that's my short analog or metaphor, but it's like, it just, you know, like that is, you know, when you talk about force, you know, you're going with the force of the current to the right way. But, you know, if you're going up against the force, you know, I'm using that as a metaphor of like going in the wrong direction. And, you know, I would look at that as like the violation part.
Right. When applied to humans. Yeah, definitely.
When applied to humans. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah. No. I completely got your, you know, analogy there. It's very well said, and I agree with that 100%. The reason why I kind of led up to this instead of just jumping right into moral relativity is because we need to understand the difference between force and violence, because moral relativism is a form of a justification to allow violence to take place at the whims of somebody's perception. And what I mean by this is moral relativity is the idea that you yourself get to play God, and you yourself get to decide that your behavior and the consequences of your behavior are either a right or a wrong. Not that it's set in stone by the effect that has actually taken place in manifestation. That you did a wrong behavior to somebody. You stole something from them. You violated them in some form or fashion. And you don't want to admit, because you're scared or because of ego or brainwashing or whatever it might be, you don't want to admit that you did a wrong deed, that you have done harm to somebody. So you say, it's a right to me. I get to make it up because I'm God. I get to play God here, and I get to determine what right and wrong is. So I stole from this guy who has done nothing wrong in any form or fashion towards me, and I've taken his property from him unrightfully, and now I'm saying, well, that's my right to do so. It's my right to go out and do that behavior. And that's what moral relativity is simply. It's the idea that you get to make up, you get to justify wrong behaviors whenever you want. You get to excuse your behaviors whenever you cause harm and just magically manifest this idea that there was no harm. And it kind of does go into a solipsistic ideology, because it gets you in this idea, like I said, a God complex, where you think that you get to control everything, that you own everything. You own the way that the laws are manifesting these consequences in reality, which is solipsistic in a way, in my point of view. Because you're pretty much saying, like, you know, I am God of everybody, and all it takes is one more little step to say nobody else actually exists. They're all just a figment of my imagination, so I can do this anyways, because morality is completely relative to my perception, and it's completely hogwash. And we know this, like, we know objectively, inherently, that rape is a wrong deed universally, no matter where you go. It doesn't matter what culture you were raised in, what background, what race. It has nothing to do with that. And people, I still hear people to this day that say, well, if you're raised in this culture, or even some tribes, like this tribe over here, they accept rape as normal, you know, but it's just fine to go out and do that. And it's like, no, it is not okay, because you're destroying somebody else's freedom. And one of those people is a victim, meaning that one of those people do not want that behavior to be done upon them. They do not accept that. And they will, maybe they're conditioned into believing that that behavior is okay. But just because you raise a kid to think that pedophilia is okay its entire life doesn't mean it's okay. Just because you raise a kid to believe that rape onto them is okay doesn't mean it's okay. It will objectively forever remain an immoral action, and that's a universal law set in stone.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something, you know, I want to touch on here, because I hear this from a lot of people where, you know, for instance, you talked about, you know, like solipsism, you know, being like playing God, right? Well, some people will say, well, that's if you believe in God, right? What do you have to say to people who say, well, that's if you believe in God, that, you know, those things, or, you know, that, you know, you can just make these things up, or, you know, make up rights and, you know, tell everybody what a wrong is?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I've ran into that a couple times talking to people, and I just ask them usually, well, what else is it? You're the single individual that's claiming that you get to create all other things from your mind only. Your monad individuality creates all things. What else would you call that? Is that not a God complex? Is that not saying that you're the divine creator of all things in your reality? I mean, you got to be completely illogical to not see how that is what a concept of a God actually is correlated to. So, you know, I would just answer back with the question, like, what else can that be? Whether you believe that or not is irrelevant to what you're actually, you know, doing is what it comes down to. Your belief is irrelevant. Like, what you're actually doing because of that, it hurts people. It causes harm onto people, which you don't have the right to do. So whether you believe in that or not doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear people say, like, you know, I'll say, you know, what do you think created the laws of the universe? Like, you know, what created gravity? And, you know, they'll agree that something created it, which then indicates that there is a creator behind it. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. But nevertheless, I'm just, you know, I think that it's really important for people to, you know, be honest with themselves with things like that. And
right.
And, you know,
I have something to say to that. First thing is, I think that's a great topic to open up in a future podcast.
For sure.
The ideas of atheism. But I like to approach people like this with deductive problem solving. So the way I do this is by saying, okay, as an atheist, you believe in logic, you believe in math, you believe in things that are orderly. And this doesn't necessarily have to do with the God idea, but this is just something I approach them with. Because usually atheists believe that everything is chaos, that there is no such thing as order, there is no such thing as something that is in a pattern or that creates an orderly state, which is what natural law could be defined as also, you know, something that gives us order, right? So they're actually contradictory at their presuppositionals, because they're using logic to try to come to that conclusion. And their logic is flawed, but they're still believing in something which is giving them an orderly outcome, which is trying to get them to the truth. Just like math, you know, math is there to give us an orderly answer to a problem, to a question. And yet they still sit there and say, well, there's no such thing as order. So it's contradictory at that suppositional idea where, you know, you're saying, hey, I don't believe in order at any level. I don't believe in natural law. I don't believe in these things. But then simultaneously, you're using something that is supposed to give you a correct answer, which is based in order. It's based in logic. And another thing to this is that people who are materialists, they use something that is metaphysical or metamaterial, which is something that is beyond the material. And that is logic. You're using things that are metaphysical to actually come to those conclusions, wrong conclusions, that is, but they're still using that. So their ideas are fundamentally flawed and contradictory at the suppositional concept. So they suppose that this is something, but they don't actually live through that conclusively. You know, they're not living through that to its fullest conclusion, being that they're not taking a step back. This goes into something we talked about before with, like, truth. People who say there's no such thing as truth, well, is it true that there's no such thing as truth? Well, if it is true, then obviously there is such a thing as truth. If it's not true, there's obviously such a thing as truth. You end up in the same place every time, you know. So
yeah, I love that way of questioning, because what it's like the Socratic method, pretty much, right?
Yes.
It's something that I definitely have been trying to use more, because I feel like it's the best way to get people to, you know, not get upset with me, and more so just really come to a conclusion within their self. And, you know, that way it's them that they're facing, rather than, you know, me being the bad guy. And I think that it's definitely something that I really want to get further into with you, in the future, for sure.
Definitely. So. It sounds great. You know, that math thing really blew me away when I first understood it. Like, math is definitely pretty much an immaterial thing that we study through the material, you know, but the concepts of math are immaterial. They're metaphysical. So maybe we can open that up. I don't want to get too sidetracked here. To kind of go back to moral relativity, what I like to call moral relativism is the destroyer of all freedom. You know, I like using that when I talk to people, because it really hits them deep in their gut and in their heart. You know, and might not be able to pierce their mind yet, but intuitively and subconsciously, it gets them, and I can see it in their eyes when I tell them that it is the destroyer of all freedom. You know, and the reason why is because people can arbitrarily decide, you know, what is a right and what is not a right, what is a wrong and what is not a wrong. So any society that enshrines moral relativity will never see freedom. It's an impossibility, because you're going to have people that run around, and just like what we're doing today, that's where we're living. We're living in a society that is more completely hedonistic and morally relativistic. And hedonism goes in with this, because they just want to feel good rather than understanding that they have done wrong and they need to atone for that behavior through some type of reconciliation, some type of true apology, where both parties were the initiatory of the violence. The person who has committed the violence has actually said they're sorry and stopped the behavior that has caused harm and does not do that behavior anymore. But any society that actually, you know, believes in moral relativity believes that there's really no such thing as objective right and wrong. They believe that culture gets to tell you what right and wrong is, that perception gets to tell you what right and wrong is, which is absolutely incorrect. They actually believe that they can arbitrarily create or decide what those things are for themselves, you know, so that they can get out of the consequences, which you can never escape the consequences. And we see that today. That's why they're building up so massively and so repetitively, all these negative energetic forms that we're coming in contact with all the time. So, yeah, I mean, it's the destroyer of all freedom, and it's completely impossible to have true freedom in a society that embraces that ideology. And if you want an example of that, just open your eyes and look around you. We can't have freedom by continuing to live the way that we are living currently. We have to understand natural law principles, because that is what's going to actually give us the ability to meet the requirements in reality, in the manifested reality, to manifest, to create that condition of freedom.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And it's definitely, you know, it's not something that's religious. It's common sense. You know, it's about understanding that if we want to make the change and to lessen the wars and lessen the harm and the violence in the world, we have to make the change within ourselves. We can't point the finger at some, you know, politician to make changes for us. You know, there's no such thing. That doesn't exist. And it exists in illusions, but the truth is that, you know, like I said, it's this common sense, which, you know, obviously, you know, when you understand the word conscience, you know, the word conscience, when you break it down in Latin, it means cone is together, and science breaks down to sciare, which means to know. And then that, you know, that breaks down to common sense, because it means right behavior and, or the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. Then consciously being able to, you know, take right action over wrong action. And that is what we have to get to individually in the aggregate if we want to see real and positive change, if we want to see true freedom and not a whole bunch of safety and, you know, people being afraid to fly on airplanes because they're afraid of the boogeyman, like, you know, someone from the Middle East, or, you know, the new plandemic boogeyman in everybody's eyes and mouths, and, you know, so where everybody's wearing masks all the time. It's just we're going into a world of total madness. I think we're already there, but I'm just saying, like, you know, we're going into a place where it's like, you know, we're not going to be able to, you know, turn this around if we don't start to learn and get back to principles, get back to values, get back to understanding that there really is a objective difference between right and wrong behavior. And once we understand that, then we'll understand how not only it's not a religion, and that moral relativism is the cause of slavery in this world on all levels, spiritually and physically, mentally. Well, once we figure that out, we will start to see a progression. We will start to see a progression towards what we truly, really want. And that's to live an honest life, to be a good person, and to, you know, not cause so much chaos and harm in the world. Because we're all individually responsible. And, you know, you can't just keep pointing the finger at these politicians and saying that they're responsible. They are not responsible for your actions, and you're not responsible for their actions. It doesn't work that way. And I think that's just, you know, I really want to hammer that home, because that's a very, very, very important to understand.
Absolutely. Freedom is dependent upon personal responsibility. Without the ability to respond, then you have no freedom. Like, if you break that word right down, responsibility, it's the ability to respond. So I always go back to, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, but I changed the word power to consciousness. With great consciousness comes great responsibility. With the higher the consciousness, the higher and more complex the form of the intelligent beings are, and what they're creating in reality, what they're capable of, what their capacity of creation into reality is, you have more responsibility with more capacity of creation into reality, because there's more consequences that can come from doing it improperly, you know, from doing it where you're infringing upon other people's rights. You know, like, I like to dabble and think about things and hypotheticals sometimes about, like, what if there was such a thing as time travel, right? And I know this is a little bit abstract, and usually we don't talk about things like this, but if there was, like, is it your right to do that? Well, it depends on the variables with time travel. But let's say, like, you time travel and it does interfere with other people's liberties and their ability to live their lives. Do you have that right? Absolutely not. You do not. You do not have the right to interfere with my life at that level, because it's not your life. You don't own me. And you don't have the right to interfere with anybody's life. So technically, forms of time travel, if there are such things as time travel, I personally have a lot of issues with that concept, but I'm not going to get into that. The point is to, you know, test this idea. How far can you take it? Well, you don't. You don't have the right to interfere with anybody else's life, especially through violence, you know. Absolutely not.
Right.
So, you know, I just wanted to throw that in there with that.
Yeah, man. And you said, I wanted to get into ownership. I hear, like, you know, I hear a lot of people saying they don't own their bodies and they're not completely responsible for their actions. What do you have to say to that?
I think it's absolutely ridiculous that a person would say they don't own their own body. First thing is, if you don't own it, somebody else will, you know, because other people do believe in ownership. And if you're not owning yourself, if you're not taking responsibility for yourself, somebody else will gladly take that for you so that they can manipulate you and get something from your body, from the product of your labor. Natural law is absolutely dependent upon property. You know, natural law rights are invariably property rights, which makes the understanding of what we rightfully own and what we do not own of critical importance. So, like, when people tell me that they don't own themselves, all I can think is that you're just an empty shell waiting for somebody to come and control you. You know, that you don't own your mind. You don't own your actions. You don't own your behaviors. You don't own the physical, you know, manifestation of your spirit in form. You don't own that thing. So, you know, anybody else can come up and claim that at any time and say, well, that's mine. You know, I do believe in ownership, and we're all morally relativistic, so this is my right to do so. And that goes in. They're connected. All these ideas are completely related to each other. But, you know, property and freedom cannot be separated, because freedom is a property. It's a condition. It's a property of manifestation. That's why we have properties of, like, plants. Like, what are the properties of plants, you know? Well, what are the properties of human beings, you know? What do we rightfully own and what don't we rightfully own? But to own a thing means that regarding that thing or those things, an individual maintains three basic, you know, attributes of that. I don't know if attributes are the right word to say there, but they maintain these three basic dynamics of that, which are rightful possession, which means that you did not violate anybody to come into ownership of this thing, to come into possession of this thing that you have. So rightful possession. There is wrongful possession, where, like we talked about, you go out and you steal something from somebody else. That's wrongful possession. You don't have the right to that thing. The other thing is control of usage. We hear this all the time, you know, where if you own the thing because you have, you know, the control over how it's being used, right? So a lot of people use this quite a bit. And the third thing is responsibility, and that's very important, is the responsibility of that thing. So you have, not only do you have the rightful possession of it, you did not violate anybody to gain this possession, you control its usage, you get to decide how it's used, when it's used, where it's used, etc. And the other thing is, you're completely responsible for what you do with that thing and the thing itself being in existence under your wing, under your command, if you want to use that word there, you know. So in fewer words, the reason why humanity is continually experiencing a systematic and growing loss of freedom is because we collectively do not understand ownership. And we continue to commit and condone theft, because all wrongdoings come down to theft. You're taking something that does not belong to you. So, yeah, when people say, I don't own myself, it hurts my soul to hear that from somebody, because it just means you are literally just a meatbag puppet, and you will be, you know, duped into anything, no matter what. And I think a lot of people, honestly, they don't even fully believe that. Like, if somebody else tried to come in and actually manipulate them and control them physically, a lot of these people would turn right around and be like, no, 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 you can't do that, you know? And you say, well, you don't own yourself. You know, why does it matter if you don't own yourself? I'm going to own your body today and what you do with your body. You know, this is slavery. That's what slavery literally is. It's the claim of the ownership over the mind, the emotions, the body, and the product from those attributes of our consciousness, you know, the product of our labor. You know, people will resist that, but then turn around and say, hey, I don't believe in ownership. And it's like there's that contradiction in their suppositional ideologies. They tell you one thing, but when it comes down to it, are they willing to live through that completely? Some of them are. And that's what's really scary, is that a lot mm-hmm. more people are like that now than ever, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and it's like I've even heard some of those same people say that they're not under mind control at all. And that, to me, I mean, like, even when I've given them, enough to work with, enough information to work with, that mind control actually does exist and it is taking place on a grand scale on many, many layers, they still believe that they are making their own decisions exactly the way only they could ever make them, without any kind of interference. And I find that very, very, very troubling.
It is extremely troubling, Nate. I have a good quote to kind of add into this a little bit, since we're talking about, you know, sovereignty, liberty, rights, property. Samuel Adams said, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule.
I love that.
Yeah, so that says it all right there. I mean, probably the most enlightened founding father that we had. And if it wasn't for him, you know, we wouldn't have had our revolution at all. It was because of this man. And, he says it all right there. It's all about natural law.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It really is all about natural law. You know, and this is like one thing I want to say to the listeners, especially if you're new to this type of information, is that Brandon and I will be first to tell you that we were under severe mind control. And it was when we actually started to care what was going on in the world that we started to really push ourselves to know the truth. And the truth is that, you know, we were honest with ourselves and accepting that these things are going on. Why? Because it's the truth and we accept the truth. And, we're doing everything we can. And I'm speaking for both of us because I know we've been on this journey together for quite a while. And, you know, we both have been doing everything we can to shed the layers of mind control that are going on in the world. And yes, of course, you can be led into other fallacies, and that's why it's important to always use the trivium and the quadrivium. Like, use, you know, and we're going to be getting into Hermeticism here soon, and, you know, using the principles to help us, like, you know, figure out and, you know, navigate our way to what actually is true. Because what we're trying to do is, you know, gain freedom, and, you know, true freedom, not, you know, government told freedom, not nationalist freedom, actual true freedom from, you know, people who want to rule us. And, you know, it's been a very interesting journey so far. And, I'm really glad to be on it with someone that's really helped me, actually a few people. And it's very enlightening to be humble enough to recognize how much lying that, you know, for me personally, how much lying that I did to myself when I was younger, because I just had no idea about any of this. I had no idea about any of this information. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, consciously lying to myself. But once I started to realize that I was being lied to about so many things, then I started to really look at the bigger picture and realize that I have to make a change. And I have to, and if I want to see the world be a better place, I'm going to have to make a change within myself. And then, you know, hope that my loud voice and my leadership gets other people to snap out of their trance and undo their shackles, you know, get out of their cul-de-sacs and actually, you know, see the whole world for what it is and understand that natural law is the solution. It's not, like I said, like we said, it's not a religious thing. It is the binding force that helps us, like I said in the first show, to learn our lesson and to, you know, live in right action, to live a life that is not causing harm and destroying other people's lives or other sentient beings' lives, or the world for that matter. So,
absolutely, Nate. I know that there's still forms of mind control that I deal with, and nothing is as extreme as I used to, but I still find to this day, like just these little things, these programs that I go in and try to, you know, subconsciously repair and reprogram myself whenever I notice them. And to be on this path has been such a great spiritual adventure, and I would never choose to be with anybody else besides the people that have been around me for this awakening, because they have been the most beneficial and the most enlightening and most compassionate people that I've ever been around. And that includes you as a brother in this battle for freedom. If it wasn't for you and the other people that I'm speaking of, I would never have gained the understanding of my own, you know, inadequacies of looking within and doing the inner work, because that's what it really does come down to, is doing the shadow work within yourself and integrating the shadow into your being. So, yeah, I mean, I went through so many different forms of mind control. It was intense. I went through hedonism to the complete left brain prison. So I was in the right brain prison, and then I was in the left brain prison. You know, I went all over the place with it. Definitely programmed from all kinds of stuff, from culture subliminally, especially through TV and all this crap. You know, I never really got into the news mind control too much, because I was kind of part of the black sheep community, because I was more raised a rebel than most people. And I even tell people that I was the black sheep amongst the black sheep, because I kept questioning, like, why the hell are you guys claiming you want freedom and you're not doing what's required to meet the universal laws to actually manifest freedom? So when I was younger, I did understand these things at some level, but that's because, you know, I was raised on some of the principles of the founding fathers and things like that. Doesn't mean that I was perfect, and I don't think any of us will ever be perfect, but to try to be perfect is the closest that we can be to perfection, you know, to always try to enhance ourselves, enhance our consciousness, and do better without causing violence and without destroying people's freedoms is what I would consider to be quote unquote perfection, you know, that we're progressing. We're expanding consciousness. We're expanding our dynamic of how we live.
Right. I'm glad that you said the trying part, because the thing is that, you know, why is it that love is so hard for, especially to just to understand? And it's because it, you know, when you try, you care. And when you care, you put in lots of effort, and you are realizing that anything easy, It's not really like, you're not really learning anything from it. You know, this, like I said, again and again, I'm just going to keep on saying this, is that, you know, it's the lessons. It's the lessons that we keep on learning, and we're going to fail like constantly until we finally get the lesson. And so as long as things are easy in a world that's really beat up and, you know, a total mess, then maybe you should really start to question and be tougher on, you know, what your intake is of information. Because, you know, when you're trying to, you know, understand information like this is, I know for me, it was really hard to understand this information, but I kept trying, I kept pushing, I kept saying, I want the truth. I really want to understand this, because I know that there's something right here. I know that there's something valuable here. And it wasn't easy. That's the thing. It was not easy. And so I persisted. I gave up so many things to do what I'm doing. I made time and I paid attention. The spiritual currencies, you know, man's currency is, you know, spend money and pay bills. And then you have spiritual currency, which is, you know, spend time and pay attention. And that's what I ended up transitioning towards. You know, obviously, like, the things that I've done in the past, I'm glad that I went through them. I got to experience things. But the truth is, no one was really putting this information in front of me. I had to go search for it for myself. And I wish that someone did, but no one around me knew this type of information. This information has been hidden from us. So we're just doing our best now to expose it and show that, you know, this isn't an easy thing, and it's going to take your time and attention, and you're going to have to try really hard, because I'm telling you, the way things that are going right now, who knows how much more time we're going to have. And you know, and that's not to scare people or fearmonger. It's just to say, like, hey, my eyes are open enough to know that things are really not going well, and it's going to take extra effort and, you know, your undivided attention to really, you know, make changes in your personal life that are going to affect changes in the world.
Absolutely. And that was very well said, Nate. I also like to point out, like, when you're trying, you've already become aware of something, which means that you've already done the first step, which is that you've expanded your consciousness to a higher degree than what the problem actually is. You know, you're actually already on the pathway to creating a change. So, you know, the whole idea of there is no try, just do or do not, you know, well, you're already doing. Like, if you're really trying, meaning that you've become aware, there's already a form of doing, but then you got to really do, which is the next phase of that doing internally. You have to externally do. You have to take it to that next level of manifesting it through action. And so I just wanted to add that in there also.
Well, Brandon, I see we just went over the hour mark, and I think that's a great place to end. So that's all the time we have today, guys. Thanks for tuning in and giving this information your time and attention. You can find more information or our work here at cubbyhole.com. That's CUBBYWHOLE.com. There you'll find news, updates, videos, and more. We hope you have found value here today, and please tune in to the next show where we go further into natural law and expand on the topics we just touched on today. So it is really important to watch these natural law shows, or to listen to these natural law shows, in order to not miss, you know, the bigger picture, the fuller picture, and to grasp a better understanding. And that being said, thanks for being on today, Brandon. It's really awesome to have you back. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.
Till next time.